This is a podcast from Minute Media.
You're listening to the Eyes on Isles podcast with Matt O'Leary and Mitch Anderson.
Hello and welcome to the Eyes on Isles podcast, episode number 220. What's going on? I'm Matt O'Leary. He's Mitch Anderson. Mitch, what's up, buddy?
Not a whole lot. I was talking to you about my day and it was quite uneventful. Just going about the motions, making sure my kids don't throw up. Elliot has been throwing up the last couple of days. He seems fine now, so he's going to go back to school. But it's always super crazy stressful when one kid goes down with something, because then it's just like shut down city. What walls are we putting up? Who can we let in? Who can we not? Where can they go? Do both have to stay? It's just the whole kind of gambit of like decision making that we didn't have to do like a year ago, which is fine. It is what it is. It's just, oh my God, I can't wait for COVID to be over, whatever that is.
No, exactly. I'm not in that position yet, but I could only imagine just the trying to put out the fires of just one kid being sick and then, oh no, what's going to happen with our other, or us too. Like as a parent, I'm sure you get it.
Yeah, so it's like they don't take rational decisions either. Like he's throwing up and I'm going, buddy, I've got some gravel here for you that will help you. And he's like, no, I don't like that. What do you mean? I don't like the taste of it. Well, I'm sorry. I never liked Buckley's, but I had that shoved down my throat to stop my coughing and it worked. So, buddy, you don't want to throw up? Take the gravel. No, no, I'm a power through it, the six-year-old says. Unbelievable.
More power to him, I guess.
He did not, though, power through it at all.
Understandable.
What's going on with you?
This is going to be just the polar opposite, but I am enjoying a nice beverage over here. I was feeling in a very fall mood today. I don't know. It was kind of cool weather-wise, and it's been warm for the fall. I don't know for up there for you guys if it's been a little warmer than usual, but that's been the case at least here on the island, but it felt a little cool today. So it's a Hudson whiskey, or from, yeah, the Hudson Whiskey Company. And it's, what is it? Rye whiskey finished in maple syrup barrels. And it has like a little hint of like, it tastes like you're drinking an alcoholic pancake. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, we have that. It's called Sortilège here, and it is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. I can only imagine what that tastes like. Oh, God. Mm. So tasty.
I'm feeling very festive and ready to talk some hockey now.
Yeah, because, oh my God, buddy, nothing's happening. Nothing's happening.
We were talking before like hitting the record button here. The fact that they've played one game since the last time we recorded, that's insane, man. They have had this extended break, which I'm not necessarily complaining about from a fan perspective because, like, hey, if you're on a 13-game road trip, playing back-to-backs and like, you know, four games a week or something like that, it is not ideal. But from a content perspective, it's been a little tough out here, man.
Yeah, right? Like you go a full week and there's one game. We have a 5-day break and then a 4-day break with one game between it. What are we doing here? And I get it. Yes, you're like you say, they're on the road. If they're ever going to get this type of break, now is the time to get it. Absolutely. But can we make it just a little bit shorter? Just a little bit? And this is me just speaking about me. I'm not even thinking about the players right now, which I probably should as a decent human being.
Right.
But I'm going to be a little less decent right now and just think for myself going like, what is that? The season starts, right? And it's like, hey, there's games. But not for like 2 weeks, guys. We're going to take a 2-week break. And you're going, but you just started. We had 3 months of nothing, and you're giving us 2 weeks of nothing, 2 weeks in. What are you doing?
It's a big old tease, which I don't like very much. But it's, well, they're back in action tomorrow. But what we wanted to do, almost the entirety of this episode, because there's not a lot of new storylines, but we kind of wanted to go through the good, the bad, and the ugly to the Islanders start. Through seven games, they are 3-2-2, which is...
That's right.
Okay, it's not awful, it's not great, it's middle of the pack, okay.
Yeah, and I think we should start there as far as like the record itself, because we've seen people already going like, oh my God, if they lose to Montreal, hit the panic button. And they're going, look,
come on.
I get it, Montreal stinks, I get that, I absolutely do, but that's not how it works. That kind of goes back to like me in the schoolyard going like, we beat the best team, now we're the best. Meanwhile, you look at our record and we've lost like every game but that one. You don't vault up to the top because you beat the best, just as much as you don't vault down to the bottom or fall down to the bottom because you lost to the worst.
No, obviously you want to win, and we want the Islanders to win, but I'm sorry. I can't, on November, what is it, November 3rd? I can't be hitting the panic button on a season. I just can't do it, especially because they would be at 500 at that point, right? They would be 3-3-2. Like, oh, come on. We can't be serious with that.
No, we can't be serious. So if they're like that, that's 8 games in, yeah, they'd be exactly 500. 8 points from 16 games. Or sorry, 8 points from 8 games, which is 16 of a possible 16. Full 500. Well, I don't understand what there's to complain about. Yes, obviously losing to Montreal would suck, and the first two losses would also suck. But we have to remember they're on the road, right? If we're expecting the Islanders to come out of this with a, like, I don't know, 700 win percentage with a 13-game road trip, I'm sorry, that's not what the Islanders do. That's not what the Islanders have done for years now in Barry Trotz or most hockey teams, right? Their 0.571 points percentage right now, only 10 teams had a better points percentage than that on the road in 2018-19, which was the last time we had a full season. Only 10 teams. So if you're saying the Islanders better be better than 10 teams on the road, what are we talking about here? They've never been an excellent road team. They've been middle of the pack, maybe top of the middle at best since 2018-19. Them being 3-2-2 just on a record in and of itself, looking at it from, you know, high above, it is perfectly fine. And I would lump that into the good category just because it's not bad and it's certainly not ugly.
No, I agree. I'm having an issue finding it. I was trying to look up what their road record was last year. And I'm able to find what their away record is when scoring first, but I'm not able to find just home versus road, which is really annoying right now.
I should be able to get that to you in just a second here. So their away record last year was 11-13-4.
Okay. But that's the thing. Like, I feel like if you could be a 500 team, or a little above, obviously, in a perfect world, on the road, and then take care of business at home. Obviously, you're not going to have a 100 win percentage at home, but you're going to win, I don't know, what, 65% of your home games, 70%
probably,
of your home games, something
yeah.
like that, then you could absolutely survive like that. I feel like most teams in the league are like that. Very rarely do you have these teams who have these, you know, ungodly win percentages or points percentages on the road. That's just not how it works in this league.
The Islanders were 0.464 on the road in terms of points percentage last year.
Yeah, I mean, come on, get that a little bit over 500. I'm more than content.
Right? You get that just a little bit over 500. They're not ranked fourth in the Mass Mutual East, as it was called last year. They're probably somewhere near the top. Remember, they finished only 6 points back of top spot. 2 points back of Boston for third, and 11 points above the Rangers, who are in fifth.
Yeah.
So, like, they're a playoff team. The road record didn't impact their playoffs, but they probably would have ranked a little bit higher. But again, they did all that, and they still went all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, there's no reason to hit the panic button 7 games or 8 games into the year. It's not time for that.
No. I know you wrote about that today, but this week rather, but I'm glad we brought that up because that's one thing that I think you have to start with. So we're putting record into the good category at this point?
I would say so. I'm gonna jam it in there if you don't want to.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's not like if we had another category, like great, it's not in a great category.
No. But it's perfectly fine, right? Like, yeah, you know, people look at the record and they go like, oh my God, they're 7th of 8. And you're going, okay, fine. I guess they're 7 of 8. But like they've got what? 8 points. They're 2 back from 5th, 3 back from 4th. Like, what are we talking about here? And they got a game in hand on just about everyone. They've got 3 games in hand on the Rangers.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like they, comparatively to the rest of the league, I feel like they've barely played.
They have, right? Like, the 7 games played is the lowest in the Metropolitan. Most of them have played 8. Some have played 9, the Washington Capitals, and 10 for the Rangers. Like, what are we talking about here? If you do points percentage, they're 7th. So they jump up a spot if you do points percentage. Still not a playoff spot, obviously, but, you know, it's not the end of the world. Again, 7 games in.
Yeah, that's... Anyway... continuing on this good trail, can we talk up the Islanders' third line a little bit? Because I know that's been a hot button issue. Early on, it was, oh my God, it's phenomenal. And I still am at it. It's very good. But I feel like because the points aren't there for some of them, people have shied away from that line a little bit. And I don't think that's necessarily a fair thing to do, Mitch.
No, it really isn't a fair thing to do, I would say. And yes, the points aren't there comparatively to the first or even the second line that leads a team in production just on an individual basis. But when you look at like expected goals for that line, they're in the top three in order. Zach Parise, Oliver Wallstrom, Jean-Gabriel Pageau. Expected goals for 61.9, 59.89, and 59.06 for Parise, Wallstrom, Pageau, respectively. That's top one, two, and three in order. No one else comes even close. Next one is Kyle Palmieri at 53.3. He's a full 6 points back of Jean-Gabriel Pageau.
Yeah, I don't really know what else you could possibly want. And something that I wrote about, I think it was last week at this point, but was guys who I thought were on the verge of breaking out due to underlying numbers. And like Pageau absolutely has to be on that list. Parise absolutely has to be on that list. I had Anders Lee on that list as well. But just speaking on the third line in particular, like Parise has no points right now in 7 games. But I don't think any rational person is going to say he's been playing poorly because he doesn't have any points yet. I think he's been every bit what the Islanders needed on that line.
I can't understand anyone who'd be like, I need production and I want him gone because he hasn't scored yet. Yeah, you're right. He hasn't scored yet. But again, he leads the team in expected goals for. You have to consider what the context is for that line, how they operate and what their role is, right? Because that's important. As it should be in any system and for any team, their role is to generate offense out of a defensive position. They start 60 to almost 70% of their shifts at 5-on-5 in the D zone. That means they're already under the essentially under attack already. So the possibility or the percentage of times that they're going to get a shot against rather than generating a shot for is going to be significantly higher. But they're still able to generate more scoring opportunities, we looked at expected goals for, than they are giving up. So that means, yes, they start in the D zone, but they translate that starting in the D zone and go forward. Jean-Gabriel Pageau getting, like, I think it's 55% of his faceoff wins. I don't have the number in front of me, but I can get it in a second here. Obviously helps that. But that's still part of the line. That's how they work. He's a portion of that line. They're able to get into that O zone and then generate opportunities because of guys like Zach Parise and Oliver Wallstrom and Jean-Gabriel Pageau as well. Like, it's all working. And yes, the points are there when you compare it to the top and the second line, but it's coming. In any Barry Trotz system, that's how this works.
Yeah, no, exactly. And is there any... I want to bring up somebody else, but maybe I don't want to go bounce around too much. So are there any other forwards that you wanted to get into on the good side?
Anyone on the second line, specifically Josh Bailey, who leads the team in points, and that's going to anger a number of people immediately the second I say his name.
Yeah, which is, well, a good thing. I like it. But the last 3 games or so, he's been significantly better. He had a very slow start to the season. No one's going to deny that. But his play, especially in the Vegas game, I mean, he basically single-handedly won that game for the Islanders with his play there.
I would say so. He's been fantastic. And the thing that everyone has to remember is that everyone is entrenched in their own opinion, and then they're then taking the absolute extreme. Like most of us on the pro-Bailey side just saying Bailey, as in he's an elite player. We know very well he's not one of the elite players in the National Hockey League. We all know that. That is fact. That is canon. That's well-established. But is he a good player for the Islanders? Yes, that is without debate. You cannot argue that Josh Bailey is a good player out there. And his play is generating the Islanders' success. Is he the sole reason they're winning? No, obviously not. And can he be a little bit better? Yeah, of course. I would love for him to be a shoot-first player, but he's not. That's just not what he does.
No, it isn't. But I think we sign up for 5 points in 7 games. The good that I was hinting at that I wanted to get to was someone else that people overreacted to after two games, and that was Ilya Sorokin, who now is sporting a .931 save percentage and a 2.26 goals against average.
Absolutely. Right, two games in, he's done. What a bust. Wasn't it the same thing last year? Two games in, he's a bust. Unbelievable. Yeah, he's just, I'm trying to get his goals saved above average. And he's, where is he here? I cannot find it for the life of me.
I have it at 4 on Hockey Reference.
Right, like, come on here. What are we complaining about? He's been fantastic. And I'm sure most of the people who are maybe down on him, and then maybe you could say the same, like, do you think that most of the people who are down on him after those first two games are kind of like, oh boy, okay, boy, was I wrong?
No, because the same people who did it last year.
God, Jesus, people, come on, man.
Right? Like, it's not like, oh, I learned my lesson the first time, I'm not going to make that mistake again. It's right back on the horse.
Right. I guess it's like this narrative they've got, be like, it didn't work last year, but I'm going to hold on to it. And the second he's bad, ha-ha! Yeah. And then you go like, well, yeah, he was bad that one game, but look at all these other games that he was really good in.
Yeah, what about the two shutouts? How do we feel about that?
The two shutouts and then carrying them in a number of games where they didn't get shut out. Like, he has been, again, like I said with Bailey, not the reason they're winning, like the only reason they're winning, but he's a strong contributor as to why they're winning. Again, he can't score goals, right? He can't score them, but he can certainly prevent them. And he's keeping the Islanders in these games from at least after the first two.
Yeah, I mean, without a doubt. Obviously, it was ugly early on, but his turnaround has been, one, phenomenal. And I just don't understand, like, why is this a surprise to people? He did the same exact thing last year, and he did the same thing in the KHL.
Yeah, like, he's going to take, he always takes a little bit. It's not that he always starts slow. In the KHL, he never did. I looked at the numbers. There's not a single slow start for him. I just wanted to make sure I was right in saying what I said, and I was incorrect that he's a slow starter. But he seems to be a slow starter at the NHL level, right? We've got 2 years, and it happens back-to-back years. But that doesn't mean he's not adapting to the situation around him, and that's exactly what he's doing. He's learning, adapting, and molding his game, and he's getting better every other day. So I don't understand where anyone could say he's not good, because he very clearly is.
Yeah, I don't understand that, but absolutely, things you love to see. Is there anyone else in the good category that you want to hit before we start moving to bad?
There's probably other people I can get to, and just because I didn't say them or you didn't say them doesn't mean they don't belong there. So you, listener at home, enter in your own good. But I think we should now transition to the bad and then get to the ugly in a little bit there.
Yeah, absolutely. Is it harsh to put Noah Dobson in the bad category?
No, I don't think so.
I'm not talking ugly, but he's underwhelmed me a little bit. And I feel like that might be a little bit of a controversial take to some, but I know he has the 3 points. But I anticipated with Nick Leddy gone and Devontae's gone that he would come in and have a more defined role. And really, it's been inconsistent. There's been games where he's gotten the 20 minutes of ice time and it has looked okay. And then there's been other times where he's playing 14 minutes and you see why, because he's not winning any puck battles and he looks lost at times in his own end. And it's like, I don't know, it's just a little frustrating. That's all.
No, I think you're absolutely bang on to put him in the bad category. Not to say that he's been atrocious out there, because you're right. You point to those 3 points. That's something. And he's been decent enough in terms of transporting the puck. But you're dead on, like bang on. If I had a nail, I would hit it in the head right now, because that's exactly what you just did. He's not picking up the baton right after Nick Leddy left. It was held back for him, and he fumbled. Doesn't mean he won't pick it back up and run with it again. It just means that right out of the gate so far, he's fumbled with that assignment. Can he eventually get there? Yeah, I think so. But so far, not so good in terms of that regard. I would totally agree with everything you just said there about Noah Dobson.
Because the thing is, and I don't know if it's necessarily fair to compare the two, but they are going to be compared when where they were taken, and I'm talking about Oliver Wallstrom and Noah Dobson, because they were taken with back-to-back picks. I just feel like that Oliver Wallstrom is a little bit more, I don't know, a little further ahead than Noah Dobson in terms of the in terms of their progression right now. And maybe it's because Dobson was here earlier and is maybe asked to do a little bit more playing in a, what I guess is a top four role versus with Wallstrom, who's playing on the third line and really hasn't been asked to do a whole lot more than that. Maybe that's part of it. But I just look at Oliver Wallstrom's play where he has 4 goals in 7 games and we're starting to be like, oh my God, like the Islanders found their sniper. Where with Noah Dobson, it's not like, oh my God, this is a surefire top four guy. It's he has that potential. Maybe he's that, but he hasn't shown it nearly enough yet.
Yeah, I think there's maybe moving of the goalposts when it comes to Noah Dobson. Because you're, I think with him, it's that you come in or he comes in and it's they don't really have a spot for him. So it's just pick up what you can. And then it's you're going to play bottom pair minutes and just do whatever. And then it's now you're a Nick Leddy replacement. And it's like, okay, well, now I got to, you know, constantly evolve and change my game. And I don't think he's the only young player to have that kind of thrown at him. That's how it works. But I expect that there's going to be something, some stumbling out of the gates. And that's exactly what's happening. Doesn't mean that because I expect it that, you know, he should then be in the good category because he's doing exactly what I want. No, ideally, I would hope for him to pick up the baton right away and run with it. But I expect there's going to be some baton fumbling, and there is so far. How long that goes is what's going to be the issue here. Right, like they need him to be Nick Leddy 2.0, as close to it as possible. He will never be exactly Nick Leddy. He's not as smooth of a skater as Nick Leddy is. He's not as fast as a skater. He's better. He's got better instincts on both sides of the puck than Nick Leddy does, I would say. But he doesn't have that pure transporter role that Nick Leddy did, and I think the Islanders are realizing that right now. Which kind of sucks because they don't really have someone to take up that role right away.
No, they don't. They clearly don't. They were hoping that Dobson was going to do that, but he hasn't so far this year. And maybe that was asking too much of him. I mean, he's still only 22 years old. I get it. And overall, I mean, his average ice time right now is 18 minutes, 15 seconds, which is a massive improvement from what we've seen. But there's still those times where he's getting, you know, 14 to 16 minutes a night, which I thought were going to be long gone by this point.
Yeah, I thought so too. But yeah, there's nothing more to say than I thought so too. So hopefully that changes because he's earned it, not just because we want Barry to change that number. But hopefully he starts earning that as quickly as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. Who else in the bad category did you want to get to?
I don't want to harp on defensemen too much. But I do want to make a slight note that Ryan Pollock has not looked great so far.
Yes. So in one of the post-game shows, the most recent post-game show, actually.
That's right.
You went on a little rant, which was great. I loved it. But can we transition some of that onto here, or just the main gist of what you were saying there?
The main gist of what I was saying is that Ryan Pollock has not looked great. And it is not because he's paired with Zdeno Chara. It's not me looking at his analytics. Although the analytics don't look great, they don't look great for anyone on the back end, really. It's he has not looked good, irrespective of whoever he's on the ice with. So don't give me the, oh, he's paired with Zdeno Chara, and that's why he doesn't look great. No, he's making dumb decisions on his own. Like in that last game, transports the puck up the ice, creates a 2-on-0, can't clear the net, creates the game-tying goal against Nashville. Like just boneheaded decisions in and of himself. On his own, has nothing to do with anyone else. And so we need to talk about Ryan Pollock as a collective and say he hasn't been up to snuff. He can, of course. We've seen it for years now where he's a good player. He just hasn't been there recently. And he needs to step it up. It has not been great for him so far.
No, absolutely not. And I think that's that's completely fair and you know rational to put it like that. But he's proven that he can be much better. So he's not someone that I'm worried about, right? You're not either.
No, I wouldn't be worried about him at all and whatsoever. I think it'll be fine. But he's got that quality. It's just he needs to pull it through. even if he's playing with Zdeno Chara, you still have to be a capable defense. You can't be giving away the puck in the neutral zone and leading to a 2-on-0. You can't do that ever.
No, absolutely. He's a better player than that. He knows better than that. I think he'd be the first one to admit that, too.
Absolutely. So when it comes to bad outside of the blue line, it's hard to pick on a specific forward, I guess. Maybe not even. I can't even pick Kyle Palmieri. He's been fine. Not great, but fine.
Bellows?
That has to be him. Because it's not Russ Johnson. He just earned a 4-year contract for reasons. But yeah, Bellows, what is going on there?
Don't know. In his two games, averaging 9 minutes, 29 seconds, a Michael Dalkolian, like stat numbers across the board, just really not a whole lot going on. Obviously not a regular, they only played 2 of the 7 games, but just did not look the part in his limited action.
No, it just does not look like he's going to be able to stick with this team. Maybe if he goes somewhere else, a change of scenery can do him some good, like a lot of players, but it is not looking good for Kiefer Bellows. I know you've already tossed over the B word.
Yes.
Tossed around the B word. I was not ready, but like, you're not necessarily totally wrong, because we're 5 years in and he still isn't able to crack this team. I understand it's a championship caliber team, but Oliver Wallstrom's been able to do it. Noah Dodson's been able to do it. Robin Salo will probably do it as soon as in the next couple of months. Other rookies have been able to crack this lineup. He hasn't, so that's on him.
Absolutely. For the ugly, now I guess that brings it to the name that is going to jump out here is Zdeno Chara, and I am not going to sit here and defend him and say that he's been good. He hasn't. He's in the ugly category for a reason. But I'm also not someone who is saying that he needs to get off this team right now. I don't think that they're going to make a drastic change like that right now.
Well, okay. I'm kind of with you there. If they let's just flesh out that argument.
Mm-hmm.
If Chara goes, who comes in? Right?
Like
Salo?
I mean, that's who they want.
But like, he's still a rookie. He's played 6-8 games, I think it is, at the AHL level. I don't have the exact number in front of me here. It's not a whole lot. And yeah, he's got those 4 points and he's able to move the puck and he's getting acclimated to that North American game and seems to do well. But I don't think he's there yet as much as I should say he's ready for the NHL. I've got a real hard time spitting this one out. He's ready for the NHL. I just don't think that the Islanders are ready for him.
Okay. Can you explain that a little bit more?
I think the Islanders aren't ready for him. And what I mean by that is because they don't really acclimate to rookies that quickly. They will bring them in, but their whole game is, we will minimize the number of mistakes that we can make. And you're probably at home screaming like, but Zdeno Chara is making mistakes. I understand that. My argument here is to say that they feel that the mistakes that Zdeno Chara is committing can be worked out. Right? To them, they're working on the premise of class is permanent, form is temporary. And he's currently in not a great form. Barry Trotz basically said exactly that just the other day, right? Like, he didn't start off great. He's going a little bit better. Things are going to work out. But with Robin Salo, they don't know what type of player he is yet because he hasn't performed at the NHL level. So they have no, right, when you look at the class is permanent, form is temporary argument, they don't know what his class is. They don't know. They have no idea. We can all extrapolate or figure out or believe what it could be or what it should be. Well, we still don't know what it is. And so for them, that unknown is a plethora of mistakes they just don't want to bring in, even though it might be less than Zdeno Chara, right? It's kind of like the Donald Rumsfeld thing, as much as I don't like to say this, like, you'd rather deal, I can't even get his quote right. Essentially, you don't want to deal with the unknowns.
Yeah, yeah.
The unknowns are worse than the knowns.
I mean, that's been their MO from day one here. That's no surprise that that's the logic with this, because since they've got here in 2018, that's been the case. And I like Robin Salo as a prospect. I think he has a really good shot of making this team next year, because you'd have to imagine that both Chara and Green aren't going to be back, so they're going to need some reinforcements there. And I'd imagine that he would kind of get the no adoption treatment at that point. But I just can't, in my mind, wrap around the idea of putting someone in with six games at the North American level in the AHL and saying, okay, this is a team that we're trying to compete for a championship with, and you're going to play right away. I don't buy it. Maybe if we're in March and these issues are still happening, this is a completely different conversation we're having, because he's got, what, half a season at that point in the AHL? That's a little bit more realistic of a conversation to have. But on November, what is it again? November 3rd, I think it's too early.
Yeah, like, he's got eight games. The Islanders have seven games played. You're absolutely right. If these issues persist, even in, like, after Christmas, yes. This change will probably be made. But we also have to remember, you pull Zdeno Chara out, who's playing, I want to get his actual, let me pull it up before I spit out my backhand here. I just want to get the average ice time. 18 minutes of average ice time this year. You pull him out. Are you giving Green 18 minutes of average ice time?
Mm-mm.
No, he hasn't done that ever since he arrived. So no, that doesn't seem like something they're going to do. So where do those minutes go? You're going to put Robin Salo getting 18 minutes a night? I'm sorry. As much as I would love to see that, the Islanders, who are run by Barry Trotz and Lou Lamoriello, are not about to give an untrusted rookie 18 minutes a night on the back end. They haven't done it with Noah Dobson. They're not going to do it with him.
No, yeah, that's the thing. Like, why would he be the exception to the rule?
Exactly. So then it necessitates a trade, which we're not getting into in this discussion. But, like, then the idea would be they must be going after someone on the trade market, like a Hampus Lindholm type of thing, which might very well be the case. In that case, you can keep Robin Salo in the AHL and just, he doesn't have to worry about anything. Just play your game, dominate, do your thing. And then the Islanders would be okay.
Right, but that's a completely different conversation. But Chara has to be in the ugly category. Is there any other player that you're putting in this category?
In the ugly category, I can't really put another player in has been like that atrocious, or anything has been that atrocious. Maybe the power play has been better recently, but the reason I'm putting the power play in there is because it's been 3 years now.
Totally fair.
Right? 3 years of absolutely suboptimal power play outside of that of last year, right? For a portion last year, the Islanders' power play was absolutely dominant, punking on every other Islanders' power play before it, at least under Barry Trotz. Something needs to change. And it's clearly not necessarily coaching. I'm not running at the defense of Jim Hillier necessarily, but we've gone from Scott Gomez to Jeff Hillier, and the results haven't changed. The only constant there is A, Barry Trotz, and B, the players. And I think it's the players that are at play here. The players aren't good enough or doing the right things when it comes to the power play. So something needs to change there, because the power play is absolutely ugly. I understand they got two goals against Nashville the other day, but I think even then with that, they're still not in the top half in terms of power play percentage. I'm just going to go and look to make sure here that I'm not spewing nonsense. Before I spew it, I guess it's too late after I spew it. But the Islanders are, where are they here? I can't find them because I'm looking for the word and I just can't see it anymore. Islanders are 16th. They're right there in the middle of 20%. Oh my God. They still need to be better. The result right now is buoyed by those two goals.
Yes.
No, right. So outside of that Nashville game, they have a horrendous power play. Horrendous. Right. It's not as epically bad as Vegas. That's still at 0%. But it is bad.
No, it's very not good. And they haven't been consistent in years on the power play. What's the fix? What do you do?
I wish it was that easy to be like, just do this. Because they've got problems all over the place, right? They don't pass the puck around enough with any sort of desire or urgency. They can't gain the zone, right? They're constantly falling over themselves when it comes to entering the zone. They don't seem to have an issue entering the zone at 5-on-5, right? Obviously, because the defensive scheme is differently from the defensive team, right? They stack the blue line, whereas they don't do that at 5-on-5. But still, they don't have a problem when they have this like structured dump-ins, right? Where they dump it in where they know they're going to retrieve it. I don't understand why they don't do that more frequently on the power play. They really like carrying it in, but their carrying schemes are either known by the defense or easily blocked because no one else seems to know what they're doing outside of Matthew Barzal.
Yeah. Are you still frustrated by Josh Bailey on the power play?
100%. He needs to be in like the, I don't even know where. I was going to say like in the high bumper slot, but he's still, he doesn't shoot. If you're going to be in that spot, you got to be able to shoot, and he's not a shot threat.
No, that's exactly the issue, unfortunately.
If he's going to be anywhere, it's behind, below the goal line.
Yeah, that's the only place he's had success on the power play, right?
It's the only place he could have success, right? Because, again, he's not a shoot-first guy. We all know that. I love him as a player, but I still recognize the flaws in his game, and as he's not a shooter. Like the numbers are very clear on that, and so is the eye test. So, like, you know, when the powers combine, they form Captain Planet, and in this case, it's not shooting Josh Bailey as Captain Planet. Behind the goal line is the best place for him, but that's Barzal's role. That's where Barzal's at. Right? Because that's the roamer. That's the roamer spot. Maybe on power play two, that's where Josh Bailey needs to be.
Okay. You can maybe sell me on that idea.
Right. Take him off power play one, put him on power play two, have him in the roamer spot below the goal line. And then you bump up. I don't remember the exact pairings because they change fluidly, but whoever's in that, I don't know, that spot then, or whoever's a good shot on the half wall on the right side, put him there. Whatever, Anthony Beauvillier, put him there, right? Left shot, shoot first guy, put him on the first power play on the half wall on the right side. Done.
Sure, and then Wallstrom on the other side, I guess?
Right, or Palmieri, although like he's used on the bumper. I wish he would be used on the side instead, but yeah, absolutely. Put him there. Perfect.
Sure, yeah. I'm with you on that. I think that's, if you're going to find any success with Bailey on the power play, that's the spot for him to do it.
Yeah. What about you? Is there anything else that sticks out to you that's been ugly?
Not really. No.
I can't really think of anything else that's been ugly so far. Maybe the fact that they're still on the road and it's November 3rd, but like that means we're 17 days away from UBS opening, buddy.
Let's go. Cannot wait for that.
Same thing. Can't wait. Oh, anyways. So I think we've gone through the good, the bad, and the ugly here.
Yeah, let's do down on the farm.
Okay, so Aturatu went off today.
Oh, these are things you like to see.
First game with, I'm going to pronounce this incorrectly, and Tia's going to hate me, but Yukurit put up a goal, the game winner, 2 assists, 4 shots on goal, 53% on the faceoff, and over 18 minutes of ice time. Mm. Was finished with the first star, was absolutely, I wouldn't say dominant, but was a force out there for Yukurit.
That's huge because obviously, you know, he changes teams, wasn't getting a ton of playing time where he was, healthy scratch and stuff like that. And it's, okay, you're going to get 18 minutes now. I mean, massive difference.
Big difference. He had a huge confidence boost. Yes, he's playing for a lower, I'm going to say caliber team, but it's not even just that. It's he's playing on a team that clearly wants to put him in a spot that he can flourish. And he's playing with the team's top scorer. But like it's, and he's playing power play time. He's getting penalty kill time. This kid is getting time. And if you're an Islanders fan, results aside, sorry, I keep burping because my God, this beer I'm drinking is very hoppy. Very, very hoppy. It's absolutely delicious, but it is, whew. Anyways, if you're an Islanders fan and if you're listening to this, I don't see why you wouldn't be. All you care about is this kid getting ice time. Irrespective of the results, you don't care if he's scoring goals, although you want that, and you don't care if he's putting up points, although you want it. What you want to see is game time, because all you want is for when this kid gets to North America, and he should be here as early as next year, you want this kid to have as many reps under his belt as possible. The fact that he's getting goals and assists is gravy, and that's heaven for me already.
We love it.
Exactly. And so like things are going in the right direction. Does he keep putting up 3 points a game at the legal level? No. His production is going to dry up. Don't get used to it. But he's in a role where he's going to be allowed to let his skills shine, and that's all you should care about.
That I love it. I can't wait to see what he does there the rest of the year.
Yeah, exactly, right? So like, that's the thing, right? It's still really early in the year. They play till March. They're like, I think, 10, 12 games into the season. It's incredible. And it's like, maybe more than that, maybe 14 games into the year. They still got another like a bunch of games to go. He's going to have so much ice time when he's done. This is not going to be like he's playing every other day. Now, he's playing every day in the top six on the power play, on the penalty kill. Incredible.
Love it.
Other than that, there's not a whole lot of action going on. It's also been quiet in terms of prospects. But I want to talk about Simon Holmstrom. Because okay. Simon Holmstrom has been catching a lot of SHIT for years, mm-hmm. and rightfully so, because he hasn't been doing much since he arrived in the Islander system. But he's having a really good year for Bridgeport. He's got 5 points in 8 games, had a 3-point game the other night where he looked like a first-round pick. And he's now cracked my personal top 5 for prospects. I track their NHLE for every game, and he's now top 5. Well, actually, he's number 6. Aturatu just bounced him out today. But he's right there in the top 6, we'll say, for Islanders prospects with an NHLE of 19.9, meaning he's basically scoring at a 20-point pace at the NHL level, at the AHL level, which you might say, like, oh, 20 isn't a lot. This is the Islander system, mind you.
You have to take that into account.
It's also double what he did last year. He had 7 points last year. 7 points at the AHL level for the Bridgeport Sound Tigers. He's got 5 already.
I mean, that tells you all you need to know right there. Because last year we're beating him up a little bit, but the storyline all offseason was this has to be the year he figures it out a little bit, and so far so good.
Exactly. There's one person that reached out to me, JP and VA reached out to me on Twitter, and I use it in one of my videos, and I'm going to use it again here. I'm sorry, JP, if you didn't want me to talk about it, but I think it's too good. And it was during the Nashville game, and he said, I still wish we had Tomasino, but I'm glad we don't need Holmstrom. Right, and so the idea there is that we're at a point where like Tomasino is clearly the better prospect. That's easy. And Tomasino, if you don't know, was taken 24th overall, as far as Holmstrom was taken 23rd in 2019. And he's already playing at the NHL level, whereas Holmstrom is not. But the Islanders aren't in a place where they need Tomasino, or in this case, Holmstrom to hit. Right? They don't need that. They want it. They desperately want it to happen. But if he doesn't hit, where's the loss? Right, their window's open, and they don't have Holmstrom. They don't need Holmstrom to keep that window open. So this is all a win. If he takes him 3-4 years to figure it out, by all means.
Yeah, it's not like they need a top 6 forward in the next 2 years.
Yeah, obviously you want it, right? Like anyone at home, like, well, we want that. Yes, yes. But the Islanders, again, their window isn't being propped up by Simon Holmstrom kicking the window open. Right, like their window is open because the entire team is working together, holding it open. Simon Holmstrom would be great if he does hit and becomes that elite level player. I don't think he ever will be. He's going to be at best a middle six winger and at the NHL level at best.
Yeah, that might be optimistic.
Yeah, and that's perfectly fine. Other than that, Anatoly Golishev also, the AHL is, they're doing very well. The Bridgeport, and by very well, I mean like relatively to last year. Golishev is a point per game player at the AHL level with 5 points in 5 games. He looks great. Absolutely great. I wouldn't be surprised if they call him up soon.
Really?
Well, Bellows has been not good, right? And there's going to be injuries. So why not have a guy who's actually shown that he can do something?
Okay. I mean, I'm not opposed to it. I just, do you think they're going to waive Bellows?
Well, that's the thing, right? Because if they do, then Bellows has to go, like you said, waivers, and someone's going to pick him up. So you try to find a trade for him. You try to get, like, maybe another first-round pick that isn't working out, or you try to get, like, a second-round pick for him or something. You can't just let him go away for free.
Yeah, I mean, you got to do something at this point, but I don't see it working here.
Absolutely. So that's really it in terms of the updates when it comes to the prospect pool. I've been in touch with Russian Lyshkov, and he's still the foot still isn't perfect. Sorry, my parents are texting me because my dad's hunting and he caught a deer. And I was looking at my phone, looking for the updates from Russian Lyshkov. He's doing better. He's going for a scan. I believe it was last week. Haven't heard a result yet, but like he's getting closer and closer towards getting back to the ice for Adler Mannheim. Not that they've necessarily, I'm sure they've missed him, but they've been winning without him type of thing.
Gotcha. So should we do the quiz?
Let's do the quiz. As we do every week. That was a very nasally as. Either way. We have a mystery New York. I'm going to be very baritone from here on in. A mystery New York Islander for you, Matt, and you at home to guess. You have 5 clues to guess. They get progressively easier as they go. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
First one. I played for the Windsor Spitfires.
Am I about to make it 2 in a row?
Probably. Did I give it away already?
Well, no. Last week, if you remember, I got on the first guess, but I'm going to throw out a guess. Usually I don't know these off the top of my head. Josh Hosang.
Holy crap. Yes.
Oh, let's go.
That's why I always start with these. So, like, there's no way. I thought you were going to right away stumble. Like, oh, it's not Josh Bailey. We just did that last week. I don't know. Oh, man. Okay.
Wow. Let's go.
All right. Damn. 2. I thought I should have started with this one, I guess. I was traded for Dominic Masson and Jonathan McLeod.
I would have had no idea.
No idea. 3, you may have got it on this one. That's why I got it a little bit easier. I scored at nearly a 0.5 points per game pace. I was deceptive here because it's 0.43 for Josh Hosang at the NHL level. And then 4 was I was sent to Sweden. So maybe at this point you're maybe like, okay, well, I know Josh Hosang was sent to Sweden, but maybe you thought, maybe he's talking about Bodie Wild. I don't know.
Yeah.
And then 5 is things started with punctuality issues.
There we go. I would have gotten it there. See, I think it's the order. You got to change the order a little bit.
Damn it. That's 2 in a row. First one. My God, that's on me. That's on me. I'm sorry, listener at home. I've effed up. So the reason I bring up Josh Hosang is not just because I want to, even though his stat line at the AHL level is hilarious. He has 6 games played. 5 points. Can you guess where all those points come from?
I would, knowing him, I would say they're all assists.
Except they're all goals.
Okay, that makes no sense.
He doesn't have a single assist.
That's strange, but okay.
But it does come from a reason. Josh was saying, and this comes from Everyday Isles, who says, who quoted what he had said recently. New York was amazing. They were kind, and they tried their best to figure me out. I was just so different from what they wanted, and that's on me, not them.
How about that? Some maturity.
Holy hell. Can we sign him back again? My God. Obviously not, but still, that is... Oh, okay. Oh, Josh. My God. Coming in hot.
Yeah.
With some truth bombs.
Yeah, definitely some very, very truth bombs there, but... I don't know. I'm rooting for him. I want to see him get another crack at the NHL. He's just a spark plug, man. He was a lot of fun.
He is. I wish him the best. And so far, again, 5 points, 5 goals. Josh Hosang had 10 goals in a full year at the AHL level once. Didn't crack double digits. He's probably going to do that this year on a decent AHL Marlies team. So, things are going well for him, and I'm glad for it.
Yeah, no doubt. Love it. So let's get to the social. What do we got going around there, Mitch?
My first social segment comes from TSN Sports. Says, whose NHL number is not retired, but really should be? And obviously this is in an Islanders context. Right? That was my first thing. Going like, there isn't really an obvious answer.
No. Do you have one? Do you have someone in mind?
I would say Pat LaFontaine would be the closest thing to it.
Yeah, that's where my head went, but was he here long enough?
Well, so that's where I'm at too. Like, he was here quite a while, right? And his stats are pretty damn good. So he's got 9 years with the Islanders. That's pretty long, right? And he's got a 105-point year in 89-90, 54 goals. Unbelievable. Has only 2 years, not 2 years, 4 years with less than 40 goals. Two of those are 30-goal years, by the way.
Unreal.
Most of those are 40 to 50-goal years.
He's on the fence.
He's the closest one, I would say.
Oh, this isn't going to be a popular take.
No, I already don't. I already disagree, and I'm a fan of his.
No. I was going to say, unless you know what I'm about to say here, but...
I believe you're going to say number 12.
No.
Oh, okay.
I was going to say, if Butch Goring's number can be up in the rafters, then Pat LaFontaine's probably should be, too.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Absolutely. Yeah, without question.
But you were talking about number 12. I think if the Islanders win a Stanley Cup, then he's going up in the rafters.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, I don't think that's... I can't disagree with that anymore. If he doesn't win a cup, I don't want to see his number there because he's got the most games played for the Islanders. That's such a flimsy thing to have him up in the rafters for. But if you've got that and you've got a cup, all right. Okay, I can't argue anymore. You got a cup. That shuts me up right there and then.
Oh, and I kind of just want to see it to watch the world burn, kind of. You know what I mean?
It would. That would burn half of Long Island.
I love it.
I guess then we would find out where all the Bailey haters are. If it's all like on Montauk or whatnot. I'm sure they're not that far out. I'm sure there's a lot of Bailey supporters out there.
Oh my God, that's good. Okay. That was a thinker, Mitch. I like that. Thanks. My first one is Ivana Spade on Twitter. She says, I'm not a fan of the large gaps of years in between Isles games. Which that made me laugh out loud, so I just had to share.
It does feel like years between games, right? The Nashville game seems so long ago, and that was just last week.
And Saturday.
Saturday, oh my God. That was 3 days ago. Four? I don't... The concept of time is beyond... I can't... I don't even know what day of the week it is right now. I guess I know it's Wednesday, but like it took me by surprise today, for sure.
Yeah. So there you go.
My next one comes from Jason Kopp, and I think you've all seen this, and if you haven't, go look at it. Jason tweets out to me, says, if you can make this the social segment special of the week, the costume will have been worth it. So it's him, dressed up as an Islanders player, hosting what I believe is his girlfriend, dressed as the Stanley Cup.
Phenomenal. I'm so glad that you remembered to share that because I did see it and it was phenomenal. That made the rounds too. A bunch of other pages picked that up. Phenomenal, phenomenal costume. Could not have done it better myself. Just tremendous work.
And then Mike Ferrari steps in. You low-key look like Barzy. I thought it was him for a second. That is one hell of a compliment. It's not to say that Jason does not look like it. It's true. But like, if anyone came up to me and said, like, hey, you look like Matthew Barzal, I would immediately run home and take a picture of my face because there's no way I'm ever going to look that good again.
Yeah, I was going to say, my ego would be through the roof if someone said that to me.
So good job, Jason. My Halloween costume, I was a princess. My daughter wanted me to be a princess with her. So like, I was pink tutu and everything.
All right. Good, nice father-daughter moment there for you on Halloween.
Absolutely. What were you for Halloween? Were you anything?
It's very niche, but it's kind of on brand. So I dressed up as a podcast host, which is very... Okay. So there's this show called Hey Babe. It's with Sal Vulcano, who's on a show called Impractical Jokers, and Chris DiStefano, who's a comedian from New York. And they started a podcast like during the quarantine, and I just got obsessed with it, and so did my girlfriend Taylor. So we dressed up as them, as the joke, and like their podcast, they film on like, if anyone who listens also listens to that show, they film like they sit on a couch and they're like uncomfortably close to each other, like for two men on a couch. So we kind of got a picture where we're like on top of each other, like pretending like we're doing a show. So
okay, I thought you were just dressed as like general podcasters. Like that's a cop out.
No.
It's like going to high school and be like writing on a white t-shirt, high school student.
Yeah, no. I'm not that cheap. It was more for the, I don't know. We're kind of obsessed with that show, so that's why.
That is fair enough. It's a for you costume, and I'm all for it.
There we go. My last one comes from the Islanders official account. They said 14 years ago today, Al Arbor returned behind the bench to coach the Isles for the 1500th and final time. That was a really good day in Islanders history. That was one of my early Islanders memories.
Yeah, that was a good one, right? Like, he comes in, gets a win on game 1500, so it doesn't seal it off, but like, oh, I just did it. Nah, gets a win out of it too, and then everyone's on the ice when the banner goes up. It's just absolutely good feels all the way around.
Yeah, that was a really cool moment.
Absolutely good stuff. I don't have anything else. I had another one, but it's really just the same thing that you had, so like, we don't need to get into it again. It's the same thing.
So before we go, please make sure to subscribe wherever you are listening to the show. Leave a rating and review. That really helps us out a lot. We appreciate all the love and support from each and every one of you. You can follow along with us on social media at Eyes on Isles FS on Twitter. I'm Matt O'Leary NY on Twitter, and Mitch is at TLO Mitch if you want to follow us as well. Facebook.com/EyesOnIsles. You could download the fan-sided app and get us there, or visit the website EyesOnIsles.com. You could also subscribe to our Patreon, Patreon.com/EyesOnIsles, and you get a whole bunch of bonus content. You get a mailbag show, post-game podcast, Discord channel. It's a lot of fun over there, right, Mitch?
Absolutely. Discord channel was going off earlier about like the whole Jack Eichel trading to being traded to Calgary potentially, and the package involved, and then we got the mailbag coming up. Not a whole lot of questions, but that happens when the Islanders don't play for 20 years.
That's what it feels like. So that's gonna do it for us. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I'm Matt O'Leary, he's Mitch Anderson, and we'll talk to you next time.